It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfort. Anchorage is lucky to have three downhill ski areas. Alyeska in Girdwood is a full-scale resort. Hilltop on O'Malley Road is a great place for kids and beginners. What's the third one? It's easily forgotten, because Arctic Valley doesn't advertise and is far off the beaten track, but it has the highest elevation, the fluffiest powder, and some of the steepest slopes around. It's a great place for experienced skiers, and some of the folks who run it as a private nonprofit organization are definitely that. Their club has been around almost 80 years. On today's show, we'll be learning about Arctic Valley, the changes happening there, and why you might want to go out and try it this winter. My guests today are both folks who have been involved in Arctic Valley and the Anchorage Ski Club for many years, and are part of the volunteer organization that makes it function. Beverly Ludke Chan is with me. She's a treasurer, long time board member, and kind of grew up there on that hill, right, Beverly?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And John Robinson Wilson is on the board. He's also the current general manager and director of operations. You might want to break that up, I guess.
That'd be nice, yes.
Yeah, and a board member. And I guess, John, why don't we orient those who maybe don't even know where Arctic Valley is? I mean, they might know about Alyeska, but they might never have skied at Arctic Valley.
Sure. So we're located just north of Anchorage. We're just north of Muldoon Road, the first exit's off the Glen Highway going north past Muldoon, and then 7 miles about off of the highway up into the mountains.
That long, long winding road that goes up into the mountains, and that's one of your big assets, right? Because your base elevation is pretty high.
Yeah, our base elevation is about the same as the top of the tram at Alyeska, so we have pretty consistent temperatures throughout the winter, usually. You know, even the past couple of years where we've had issues down here in Anchorage and lower elevations, it's stayed above freezing consistently during the winter up at Arctic Valley.
Yeah, and it also has the quality that it's above treeline, and the whole skiing area is above treeline, right?
Yep, yeah, everything's above treeline except for a few alders growing in here and there. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it's wide open and lots of terrain and places to go explore.
Yeah. So what is your vertical drop from the top of the highest lift?
It is about 1,500 feet. Do you remember offhand, Beverly?
That's pretty healthy, yeah.
Well, the top of Chair 2 is at 4,000 feet or so. Uh-huh. So
That's up there.
Yeah.
So now I recall being a kid and skiing there when a long, long time ago, in the 1960s, late 1960s, and learning to ski. And that it was a big family gathering place. I mean, everybody in town kind of went up there. And I guess I didn't realize it was a club at that time, but it's run by a group that is, it's privately run. Right, John?
Yeah, well, it's the Anchorage Ski Club's a, you know, it's a public club, anyone can join. But yeah, it's a membership-based organization, and you don't have to be a member to ski up there, which is one of the misconceptions we hear, is people think you either have to be a member or you have to be military, both of which are not true. Anyone can come and ski. We offer discounted lift rates for those who do purchase memberships.
I got you. So is letting people know that the opportunity is there, is that part of one of your challenges that you're trying to deal with right now?
Yeah, we don't have a huge marketing budget. And so, you know, things like TV and really, you know, just kind of blanketing, you know, media is not something we've been able to do. And so we've been doing kind of a lot of alternative advertising and trying to show up at winter-oriented, you know, fairs and gatherings and get our message out through the ski shops and the board shops and those kinds of winter-focused places in town.
Letting them know there's something, some new exciting stuff happening up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into that a lot more as we talk about it today, but I wanted to orient sort of the whole story a little bit to this community story. And Beverly, you were saying that your father, Dwayne Ludke, ran the Arctic Valley for, you know, a couple of decades.
Yes. Anchorage Ski Club actually formed in 1937.
Wow.
In fact, this January is our 80th anniversary.
Amazing.
And we hope to have a party up there for it. there was the first generation that formed the club. The ski area came later. It wasn't until the early 40s that Muktuk Marston came along, and they scouted out Arctic Valley and started a co-run ski area with the military. And then in the 50s, it became too big for the little warming hut that the Army had, and the Army wasn't in a position to expand, so the civilians broke off and moved up the valley a few hundred feet and opened their own lodge. And then my dad got involved in the 50s and started running the area in 1961. The club has undergone, I guess, many crises or changes over the years. Mm-hmm. And one of the first ones was when Alyeska started and half the membership went to form Alyeska.
What year was that?
That was, I think, in 1961. And uh-huh. So that left no one to run the area. So my dad stepped in and worked with several partners. I think he only meant to do it temporarily, mm-hmm. But he finally retired in 1985 from it.
25-year temporary job. Wow.
Yes, and
but when we say job, we're really talking about like a lot of donated effort, right?
Yeah, it was really a passion for him, and some years he didn't get paid. He had a regular full-time job. He actually worked for the FBI, and mm-hmm. So he just did this on weekends and holidays, and. And it was really, like I said, a passion with mm-hmm. him.
So you must remember that from being a kid, kind of growing up on that hill.
Yes, I learned to ski when I was 4, and I didn't learn the easy way. My parents were tired of me being underfoot in the lodge, so they strapped some skis to my feet and just pushed me out the door.
Uh-huh. And I had a similar experience.
I remember Jim Veach, who passed away a few years ago, he was a rope tow operator, and he used to drive his Harley up the hill with studded tires with his ski strapped across his back. And one day he took me aside and he said, "Beverly, quit using the paying customers to stop," because I would just run into somebody to stop because I had no idea how to stop. So after my whole first season, he taught me how to snowplow so I could at least stop without hurting anybody.
I have a memory of... And I'm sure my dad, if he is listening, is going to say, "Well, that's not how it really happened." So these kid memories, whatever, we get to say them however we want. I have this memory of sort of learning to snowplow, sort of learning to do like at the bottom of the bunny slope, and then thinking, little kid, okay, I'm ready to go, and going up the more challenging slope, and just shushing like straight down the mountain and ending up in that creek at the bottom. I mean, to climb my way out, but I survived.
A lot of people have climbed out of that creek.
Yeah.
Myself included.
And also the adventure of going up and down that road, which I think is probably better now than it was in those days, or maybe not much better. I don't know. It's a long, twisty road. It can get slippery, and you might want to have tire chains and be real careful in the wintertime.
Well, it's interesting. The area actually started before there was a road, and they just used military off-road vehicles to convoy up.
That's amazing how Anchorage has changed. Wow.
Yeah, and then they put in a road, but it didn't have it was one lane, and it didn't have the switchbacks that it has now. It just went straight up in between where the switchbacks are. In fact,
incredible.
What's now called the sledding hill, which is a quarter mile long sledding hill near the bottom of the road, was the road. And it was funny because the parking lot was at the bottom of the road, and you had a right-hand turn to get on the road, but if you couldn't stop, you plowed into the parking lot, and whoever was parked there.
Right.
And then when they put the Nike site up there is when they widened the road so they could get all the equipment up, and they put the switchbacks in because the heavy trucks couldn't handle the straight up with all the big equipment on.
Let's remind people of what the Nike site is.
It's a now defunct missile site at mm-hmm. at Site Summit.
On the opposite mountain across the
valley. Yeah, it's right across from Arctic Valley.
And in the wintertime, if you look up and see the star up in the mountains, that's near the Nike site.
Which it's on the side of Site Summit Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Which was a nuclear weapon that was used to prepare to shoot down Russian bombers, amazingly enough. And there's been some work done to kind of save that site because it is a really interesting
thing. There's a nonprofit, Friends mm-hmm. of Nike
Site Summit
mm-hmm. and they are working with the Army to help restore some of the buildings and They have public visits once a year up to the site.
And people might not know there was a sister site, which was Kincaid Park. Those bunkers at Kincaid Park were part of that system, too. Yes. All right, so we're talking about Arctic Valley today, skiing area that is run by a private nonprofit and is kind of reawakening, maybe expanding a little bit, getting some new facilities and spreading the word. And we're trying to help out today on Outdoor Explorer. My guests are Beverly Ludke Chan, who you were just hearing from, who is a board member and lifelong user, and John Robinson Wilson, who's the general manager, director of operations, but also a volunteer. John, let's summarize some of the changes or some of the new equipment and the new enhancements that have happened recently.
Yeah, so starting in the past few years, we've been able to do some upgrades to the lifts, and this isn't things that that our customers necessarily see, but we've upgraded the electronics in all of our lifts and the motor in the T-bar, which is the oldest lift that's currently up there. Even though the lifts aren't bright and new and shiny, and they're not, high-speed lifts, but they, the guts of a lot of them are, or of all of them actually, have been upgraded all within the past 10 years. So we've done that work, and that was kind of the what we've been doing the past few years is upgrading all of that equipment to make sure that the lifts will be, ready to able to continue running for another, 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2011, I think we purchased a used rope tow from Alyeska, and actually Beverly was the one who really pushed this project. We installed a tubing park up at Arctic Valley, and that's been hugely popular when we've been able to get it open. We need quite a bit of snow cover to fill in the gullies and the draws through there, but it's once we get that snow, it's a fantastic place, and we've noticed it really expands our clientele and draws a lot of folks up there who aren't skiers or would be intimidated to ski there. So it's been great to get more folks up to Arctic Valley and to see the views and see what we offer and that kind of thing.
Right, and it sounds like you got some new grooming equipment to improve the surface too.
Yeah, well, and so we just bought a snow gun, and so we're able to make snow up there now. And so we hope to get the tubing park open much earlier without just relying on natural snow.
Oh, great.
So yeah, that was the first step, and so we hope to have the tubing park open maybe within the next month.
And we're pre-recording, so it could be open by now.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you guys have a website that folks can check.
Yep. Yeah. www.skiarctic.com. And
we'll have that linked at outdoorexplorer.org so folks can check out Arctic Valley and find out what's going on there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other big thing we did this summer was we purchased a used winch cat, which will allow us to groom out the some areas of the main hill, which is a capability we haven't really had. We have had a groomer, and we have another groomer still, but it doesn't have the capability to climb straight up and down the hill that the new one does. So
where did this new equipment come from?
It came from from Park City, so Park City Resort outside of Salt Lake. It was a used piece of equipment from them that we bought through a dealer in the Lower 48 and had shipped up here this summer.
Okay. That must be a challenging project.
Yeah, it was. We had some great support from Mats and Lions. They donated shipping from Tacoma to get it up to Anchorage, which was huge for us. Helped a lot. And then had to go and install some anchor points up on the hill for the winch that's on the cat to attach to. So
explain how this works. The mountain is too steep to just drive up and down, so you have a winch so you can kind of winch it up and down and keep it from just sliding down the hill or falling over?
Yeah, so the hill is just too steep to be able to, in a controlled way anyway, just walk straight up and down it. And so the winch just provides the extra bit of control that you need to really be able to have to be able to make a really good surface.
Hmm. So what does that do for the skiing? I mean, how is the skiing going to change because of that improvement?
So first of all, I tell everyone that, you know, we're not turning into Vail. We're not going to be, you know, the whole mountain is not going to be groomed out. You know, we're all still huge fans of the powder that we get up there when it snows, and still having that snow available for everyone on the weekends when, you know, for those of us who have regular jobs and work Monday to Friday.
Right.
So that's our first priority, is, you know, that part's not going to change. But we are going to groom out an area next to the T bar on a regular basis to have as a groomed run that's a little easier for beginners or intermediates, folks who aren't as comfortable. And also, we've been talking with the local youth racing teams as well as with the UAA downhill racing team. And they're going to be practicing up there this winter. So it'll be great to get the kids up there and skiing, as well as have the UAA ski racers up there and on the hill with us.
Yeah. So it sounds like a tremendous amount of effort to run a ski area in any event. I mean, like, if you thought about it naively, you might think, well, somebody's got to go and turn on the lift. But you've got to have you've got to operate this equipment, and there's a lot of safety issues involved in all of that. How many people are working there, and how do you manage all that as a volunteer sort of run organization?
Yeah, so what we do right now is there's a group of volunteers, maybe five or six of us, who do the maintenance in the off season. So our goal is during the summer to go through all the lifts and do all the required maintenance and look the lifts over and climb all the towers and change shivs, and we have to relocate where the chairs are on the rope and all that kind of stuff. So our goal is for us volunteers to go up during the summer and get all that done while the weather's
nice. How'd you
learn
how to do all that stuff?
We've had a couple of folks who've had prior experience in the ski industry that have taught us, and then we've passed on. And then there's some you know, the folks at Hilltop and Alyeska have been great, as we've had questions too. They're always they're always happy to help and provide advice. So, and there's actually some good resources out there for, you know, when we have more advanced questions, we can always go and find an answer from someone who knows, even if it's, you know, someone in the lower 48 who's dealt with it before.
Yeah, interesting. You would think that you guys would be competing with these other areas, right? Because, you know, three ski areas in one town, but I guess you all have a kind of a different niche.
Yeah, I mean, Hilltop is really focused on beginners and teaching folks to ski and that sort of thing. And, you know, and we have more intermediate to advanced terrain for the most part. You know, and Alyeska is, is the bigger resort. And so, you know, there's intermediate advanced terrain at both Alyeska and up at Arctic Valley. But, you know, folks who go there and people who come to Arctic Valley, you know, it's two very, very different experiences. You know, we're very, very laid back, very casual. You know, there's kids running around in the lodge and, you know, and hanging out, and people just relaxing up at the bar, you know, and having a couple of drinks between runs in the afternoon. And, you know, it's a very different and very, very laid back. Even on a powder day, it's a lot calmer and a lot fewer folks.
Probably no lines.
Yeah, you know, and the only time
Do you ever
time
have lines?
When we open up chair two on a powder day, we'll get a line for about 30 minutes. And then as soon as everyone gets up the lift, then the line's gone and everyone's spread out on the hill again. So, yeah, it's pretty rare for us to have any sort of significant lift lines up there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we shouldn't go any further without telling people how much the lift tickets cost and when you're open. I mean, once you've got, you know, snow winter operating, and we're pre-recording about a month ahead, so we can't really predict what the winter's going to be like.
Yeah, hopefully we get some more snow here pretty soon.
Yeah, we're recording right before Thanksgiving, and we're kind of suffering.
It'll turn around soon, I'm told.
Yeah,
I hope.
Yeah. So, how much are your lift tickets?
Full day lift tickets for adults are $35.
Nice.
Discount, so student, senior, and military is 30, and then kids 7 to 12 is 20, and under 7 or over 70 is free.
Do you guys have equipment rental or just bring your own?
Yeah, we don't have any rentals at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are the normal, I mean, when you've got good skiing, what are the normal hours? Is it just weekends or all week?
Yeah, just weekends at this point. So we do 10:30 on Saturdays, and 11 o'clock starts on Sundays.
Until dark?
Yeah, basically. Early season, we close at 3:30, and then the we'll increase our hours as daylight increases. And so we're open until 5:30, starting, I think, in mid-March.
Cool. So it's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about Arctic Valley. And that was John Robinson Wilson, who is the general manager, a volunteer position at Arctic Valley, which is run by a nonprofit. I'm Charles Wolforth. It's Outdoor Explorer. Also with me is Beverly Ludke Chen, who is a very longtime board member and kind of grew up at Arctic Valley. Beverly, like, here's an answer, a question that I think people would like to hear the answer to, which is, why be involved in this, right? I mean, you've been involved in it your whole life. Most of us think of skiing as sort of a recreation thing we go out to do for fun, not as something like we're devoting huge amounts of time to supporting, you know. What keeps you involved in doing this?
It's an overall passion, and, you know, I grew up doing this. I started skiing when I was four. You know, I've always skied at Arctic Valley, so I might have a different perspective from other people, but it's rare to be able to get that far into the wilderness, that close to Anchorage. And so being up there, it's you're on the edge of the wilderness, and it's just such a complete different experience to being in Anchorage that it just keeps bringing you up over and over and over again. And, you know, eventually you want to make sure that you always have that opportunity and everyone else has that opportunity also. And so then you start getting more and more involved just to make sure that that opportunity stays around for everyone in the future.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have been involved basically your whole life. I know John is an Eagle River kid originally, yes?
Anchorage.
Anchorage, yeah. Kid, okay.
East Anchorage, yeah.
And so is that part of it, just the connection that you have with the people who have been doing this for a long time and keeping it going and recreating there?
Yeah, and it is great to be able to go up to a place where everyone knows who you are, greets you by name. And, you know, we can't guarantee that to everybody, but if you come skiing there long enough and if you order enough beers from the bar, we will learn your name and you'll become part of the family just by default. And, yeah, it's just something you can't help but go up and just to experience the wonderful wilderness and the proximity to it. But you still have that hint of civilization. You still have, you know, plumbing, running water,
right,
flushing toilets.
I don't think we had those when I was a kid.
No, you wouldn't have had those as a kid. That technology came in 1972.
But I remember an outhouse that was extremely cold. You really didn't want to take your snowsuit off if you didn't absolutely have to.
Yeah, that was the old Biffy.
Yeah. So obviously things have changed, and the area has had its ups and downs over the years. The military's not there anymore, right? You were saying in 1961 it had a big setback when Alyeska started, and then kind of built back up again through the 60s. And then what are some of the other sort of periods in Arctic Valley history that have taken place?
Well, so after Alyeska formed, the Arctic Valley took a while to recover, but we recovered fine and, you know, had ski school up there. And that's where most of Anchorage learned how to ski in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And then I suppose the next setback was when Hilltop opened, and most of that learning to ski aspect started to decline and gradually went away as people learned to ski at Hilltop instead, which the train is much easier at Hilltop, so it's...
And it's right in town.
And it's right in town, yeah. And they're close enough that you can go after school, and so it, in many ways it makes more sense for people to learn to ski at Hilltop than to drive up to Arctic Valley brave the steep slopes to learn how to ski up there.
Right.
And then, of course, the Japanese purchased Alyeska in the 80s and did a big expansion, which also hurt us somewhat.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, our big expansion was in the 60s and 70s. We started out with a 400 square foot lodge with rope toes that went all the way to the top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, riding a rope toe 1,200 feet up a steep mountain is no easy thing.
It's exhausting, thing. Yeah.
So it's certainly not something you would rest on the way up and ski down. No, it right. was more work going up than it was
That's
going down.
When you get
down.
Your upper body workout.
So in 1961, we built the T-bar platter lift, and then in...
Before you go on, because mm-hmm. I want to talk about all the lifts, but I mean, the T-bar is a kind of lift that you don't see that much anymore. John, tell folks what a T-bar is, if they've never seen one.
So the T-bar is, I tell folks, it's a big surface lift, and So we have platters that hang down from the rope on a retractable rope, and so you don't sit down on it. You're standing up, and mm-hmm. You put the platter between your legs, and then it'll pull you up the mountain.
Right.
There's not a ton of them anymore. There's a handful around the. A handful of large ones around the country, most of them that still exist are little small access lifts for race courses and that kind of thing.
Right, right, right. And so yours is probably one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, as far as I've seen, I know back east there's a few I haven't seen one that's or heard of one. I don't think that's still in operation that's the size of ours.
If you go up there, somebody will tell you how to use it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, our lifties very quickly learn how to give advice and get folks oriented on it.
Say, what the heck is this thing?
Yeah, the big thing is just, if they're on skis, it's not bad. If you're a skier, it's really not bad. Uh-huh. Just got to tell them, don't sit down.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, Beverly. You're saying that was one of the first big lifts that was installed.
Right. We have the platters, and then it also has tees where two people can sit next to each other with the tee in between them.
Oh.
And it is easy for skiers to get the hang of it. It's a little more difficult for snowboarders.
Yeah,
but,
we
used to have a picture, I don't know we have it anymore, of one of our board members, and she was a snowboarder, and she would carry her kid with her under her arm and ride a platter up to the top of the T-bar. So I would tell people, well, it's not impossible for snowboarders.
Right.
And, she was 5'2" and could carry a 40-pound kid under her arm on a snowboard, so you can do it too.
You got a tough board of directors.
And then we built the T-bar in 1961, mostly volunteers.
So that's amazing that it's still functioning after this many years.
Yeah, it's been upgraded a few times.
55 years later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then in 1969, we built Chair 1, the Thompson Chair, and that has also been upgraded. And then in 1978, we built Chair 2, the Rendezvous Lift, which has also been upgraded since then. And so that was and in 1972, we built the new lodge.
Okay.
And that was kind of our period of expansion as the 60s and 70s, up until Alyeska expanded and Hilltop opened. And, of course, then, the oil economy kind of got a little volatile. And and so we were a bit at the whims of Anchorage
change. Yeah, and I want to get into more of those difficulties mm-hmm. In the second half of the show because there's a lot of history to cover, and you guys have struggled through a lot of ups and downs. And it sounds like now hopefully heading into an up with this new equipment and new snowmaking and new grooming up at Arctic Valley. So we're talking about Arctic Valley, Anchorage's other ski area, the one that's in the up the Glen Highway there rather than down the Seward Highway. And I've got two guests in the studio, and we're going to be talking more in the second half. So stick with me as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our topic today is Arctic Valley, the ski area that is on the way to Eagle River. the oldest one in Anchorage. The ski club that runs it, the Anchorage Ski Club, is coming up on its 80th anniversary. So it's one of the oldest organizations in Anchorage. Very few, I would think, that would be any older than that. Maybe the Chamber of Commerce might be 100. And it's still a nonprofit, volunteer-run organization that is running a ski area that's open on the weekends and has some good challenging terrain, high elevation terrain that has snow over a large part of the winter, and is maybe undiscovered by people who haven't been around that long, although some of us who grew up in Anchorage kind of grew up on those slopes. So I've got two guests in the studio. Beverly Ludke-Chen is a treasurer, board member, and has been involved at Arctic Valley her entire life. Thanks for being here, Beverly.
Thank you.
And John Robinson Wilson is on the board of directors, is the general manager, director of operations, second vice president, general potato peeler and bottle washer, right?
Yeah. Most things that need done go through me one way or another.
Anything that needs to be done. And you have a summer, you have a seasonal job, so it lets you devote a huge amount of time to this.
So I've got a year-round job, but it's focused in the summer months on the tourism industry. So yeah, we have a little bit more time in the winter to devote to Arctic Valley projects.
And that's neat.
Yeah.
So tell me about your skiing enthusiasm, John. You were mentioning earlier about the attraction of powder. If there's a snowstorm, a lot of people are like taking off work and going to Alyeska, but you don't have to do that if you go to Arctic Valley.
Yeah, I mean, one of the nice things about Arctic Valley is that we are open just on the weekends, just Saturdays and Sundays. And so for those of us, including myself and Beverly, who have full-time jobs, that it's still available. There's fresh snow is still available on the weekends when we're able to go. And a lot of the folks that come up are really excited about that. And we are, and even, you know, after we open it, it doesn't get skied out, for quite a while, usually. By even late afternoon, you can still find fresh snow over off of, off the high traverse, off of Chair 2, which is a great thing to be able to kind of work your way across the mountain and still have fresh snow and in hidden patches.
Like you're saying, not too much competition up there.
Yeah, a busy day for us is about 300 skiers and maybe 350 skiers, so it's really not that many people compared to the crowds you get some other places. So.
Yeah. So did you, is powder really your thing? Is that what you go for?
Yeah. I mean, I actually grew up skiing there in the mid to late 90s and early to mid 90s. And my parents took me up there as soon as we moved to Anchorage. And so we so I grew up skiing there and grew up in the kind of ungroomed terrain and really fell in love with it. And I remember working my way up the T-bar and gaining, kind of going one tower at a time as I got more confident as I was a kid, till I finally decided I could make it all the way to the top and realized it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I grew up
skiing.
That's
kind of a different ski learning experience, because most of us learn on groomed snow, and then switching over to ungroomed snow, it can be a challenge.
It is, yeah. I tell people if you can ski Arctic Valley confidently, you can ski anywhere. I've skied in a lot of places across the country and never ran into anything that I was intimidated by, and that's, I think, is due to growing up at Arctic Valley I remember days when I was a kid where there was, a foot of fresh snow and you couldn't see anything. It was a complete whiteout and, having to figure out
your way down.
There's no
trees, so it really is much more likely to have a whiteout than an area with trees.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, just the confidence.
And it's crazy steep, too.
It's pretty steep. Yeah. And that's where kind of the confidence of, and where that T-bar is nice, of being able to work your way up the hill one tower at a time as you get more confident and feel like you can handle it is really nice. So,
it seems like it would be a skier's hill as opposed to something that's maybe run by a business that's going to be more oriented to, like, how do we get more beginners in there and how do we, rent them the equipment and give them lessons. I mean, this is really a hill for people primarily who already know how to ski and are fairly confident.
Yeah, you know, we have a few intrepid folks every year who, we had a couple last year who brought their kids up who had never skied or snowboarded before, and they started them out just right below the lodge and just kind of walking back and forth with them, and they've moved to the T-bar, and by the end of the season, they were all the way up to the top of the T-bar, and, you know, with little 5 and 6 year olds, I think, and, you know, and that's great, and, you know, those kids will be able to go anywhere and, you know, and ride anything now. But yeah, it is much more comfortable for folks who already have the basics down and like you know, and can like skiing off trail and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So there's kind of a backcountry aspect to this too, because you're really right at the edge of Tugatch State Park. Do many people use it for that kind of access?
Yeah, we have, especially in the spring, our trailhead is pretty popular with backcountry skiers. You can skin up, the Toklat Creek drainage is there and leads towards the overlook into the South Fork of Eagle River Valley. And so the north side of that Toklat Creek drainage is open to backcountry skiers. So we do ask that folks stay out of the ski area boundaries if they're skiing.
You can't have people skiing uphill, right?
Yeah, we can't have people skiing uphill inbounds. There's issues with liability issues with avalanches, as well as boundary control issues, and our insurance company wants us to be aware of, and just we want to keep the snow there for the folks who are paying for lift tickets and access. So,
right.
But there's lots of great skiing over on the north side of the drainage there, and that's really popular during the summer. Folks will come up and take runs.
And you were mentioning that University of Alaska is using the area.
Yeah, so UAA will be up there a few days this winter training, and we're very glad to hear that they ski
exist,
team
yeah
still exists and will be around for years to come. So they we're looking to expand that in the future, and we're working with the engineering school UAA to explore the possibility of doing some larger scale snowmaking up at the area. So we'll see what they come up with and what might be possible with that.
In terms of just figuring out what you could do?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of questions. There's, you know, do we even have enough water in the valley to seriously make snow for the ski area?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's permitting issues of access to the water. And then there's, you know, it's a really steep area with, you know, not a lot of great access up the hill. So construction and infrastructure challenges and all that kind of thing are, you know, there's lots of questions. But we're the engineering, some of the engineering students are taking that on as a, I think, a senior project, which is great for us. And
neat.
They sound like, I talked to one of them a couple of nights ago at a party we had, and he said they were real enthusiastic. It was something different than what they usually do. So
it's all part of this do-it-yourself ethic that's up there at Arctic Valley. You know, it's like a group of people who run a ski resort.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really cool, yeah. Well, Beverly, there's other stuff for folks to do. I mean, you've got a tubing park, and so you don't have to be an expert skier to do that. Tell us about that part of the area.
Yeah, well, back when the ski club formed, it was a very eclectic group. We had ski jumps. We started the ski train. You know, anything to do with any kind of skiing, Nordic alpine jumping, anything the ski club involved in.
So it split off into the Nordic and the alpine at some point.
Yes, so it split off at some point. Once we got Arctic Valley, we just focused on alpine skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that for many decades. Well, you know, Anchorage is not just made up of alpine skiers. And, you know, one of our missions is to get people outside in the winter, get them doing stuff, getting them up into the Chugach Mountains. And, you know, rather than teach the entire city of Anchorage how to ski, we decided, well, we'll offer non-skiing opportunities for people. So we built the Tube Park several years ago, which is a great way. You don't need to buy expensive equipment. Any, you know, winter gear that your kids wear to get on the school bus every day will do for tubing. So it's not cost intensive. The sessions are fairly cheap, and it's something that anyone can do. And it's not just for kids. Adults do it too. I've done the tube park, and it's a lot of fun. In fact,
and you don't need to bring your own. You just show up.
You just show up. We provide the tubes. You just need your winter gear on.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the more mass you have, the faster you go. So for adults, it can be extremely exciting.
Okay.
And then if you're not into tubing, you know, we have the bar inside that you can sit and relax
while your kids do it, right? Yeah, and they use up tons of energy.
Yeah,
right.
And tube session is an hour and a half, and you might find out after half an hour that, you know, that's enough for you. But your kids have unlimited energy. They're still ready to go.
So a lift takes you up and you slide down.
Yes.
Yeah.
You ride the tube up.
Right.
It just has a hook that you hook
on.
See. And you ride the
it.
Tube up backwards, and then you get off and you tube down. And just over and over and over again. See how fast you can go. And then, you know, we've also done a lot to improve the summer hiking.
It's such a beautiful place to hike and berry picking. I've spent many, many happy hours up there. Though I admit it's been a while,
Yeah, and growing up, you know, most of the trails were what we call volunteer trails, which means they just crop up where people tend to walk the most, which may not necessarily be the best place to have a trail from erosion standpoint and whatnot. So over the years, we've gotten several grants from the state and the federal governments to go in and put more hardened, robust, reliable trails in to help avoid erosional problems and handle more traffic, you know, especially as Glen Alps has become more and more populated and more crowded. We tend to get more people up there now, and you know, anyone in East Anchorage or Eagle River, it's much closer than almost any other access to Chugach State Park.
These access points are so important.
And so, you know, we were letting our 5 acres of parking lots go to waste, and so we put in outdoor toilets, picnic shelters, trailhead, started putting in some more robust trails, and our summer visitors have increased because of all of that.
And then you have a trailhead fee?
Yes, we charge a trailhead fee per vehicle. If for groups who take buses up, it's per person. I've forgotten what the fee is now.
It's $5 for a day pass.
Just like the state park.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same as the state park. And then we also offer a $25 membership level. So if you become a member, there's several different price points, and they get you varying levels of discounts in the ski area. But the base one is just $25, and that just includes a parking pass for our summer trailhead users.
So I'm curious. I mean, this brings us to the economic part of this, because it's you know, it seems like you've got to make money at this thing. It's not being run as a charity. You know, it's being run as a nonprofit business, and that must have its ups and downs over the years. All these improvements you're making, John, are these pretty much coming out of money you've made from trail lift fees, or how does that work?
Yeah, we've been fortunate to get a 3 or 4 grants in the past 6 or 7 years from the Rasmussen Foundation. So they've supported us on some of these projects. But yeah, most of it has been just self-funded improvements. So we've everything we've done the past few years has come from private donations, Rasmussen, but the vast majority of it has been funded just out of money that we make from lift tickets, from Tube Park, from parking, and from renting the lodge out in the summer for events.
Yeah. So I guess you also have the challenge of safety, because there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a ski area.
Sure.
And you've got liability coverage because of the legislature passed that law years ago that kind of protects ski areas in Alaska. But how do you deal with stuff like avalanches and you know, making sure all the maintenance is the way it should be? You know, for folks who are thinking, it's some volunteer operation. Do I want my kid to go there?
Sure.
Address that.
Yeah, sure. So the snow safety part of it, we've got a snow safety team, and we, I think, have now 3 people with Level 3 avalanche certification, which is the highest level you can get, that are on this snow safety team. So they go out every morning before we open.
And then they're paid, right? I mean, you've got some volunteers, but you also have some paid staff.
Okay. Yeah, there's the team lead is paid, and the other ones are the others are volunteer. And they go out and they dig snow pits and test the snow and see what kind of wind loading we've had, and see what the conditions are, go and try to knock down any places that they think might be dangerous. And so we get them out there in the morning and have them, and they make a couple of runs through our trouble areas before we open up to the public.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on the maintenance side of it, we are inspected every year by our insurance company. Oh. They come up and they come up and they go through all of our lifts and talk with us about, you know, any issues we've had and what we've been doing. They look over all of our maintenance and operational records and make sure everything's up to date. And we also fly a wire rope inspector up whose job is just to look at the wire ropes, which move all the lifts. And he looks at our wire ropes every year and okays them. So
amazing. I just I'm kind of blown away by the amount of effort you guys must put in to keep this thing going, because you're running what would normally be a pretty sizable business with a lot of complexity to it, and doing it as volunteers.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of moving parts, and there's, you know, yeah, a lot of folks that spend a lot of time.
You've got a bar, you've got like the lodge, you've got all of this stuff.
Yeah, you know, the bar is the easy part to staff, because we still operate some with volunteers. Uh-huh. and you give a volunteer a choice between doing a 2-hour shift cooking in the kitchen, standing outside running a lift, or pouring beer, and they're pretty much always going to choose pouring beer.
Well, is a volunteer model like that sustainable? I mean, do you still get plenty of volunteers to do that stuff?
So we hire an operational staff for the summer and the winter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have paid employees to provide consistency. And mm-hmm. So we have enough paid employees to run our lifts and to, open the kitchen and to sell lift tickets and all that kind of stuff, because we know people we need at a minimum to staff enough to be consistent.
Right.
We don't want to push our volunteers that hard to, you know, demand that we have so many volunteers up there. So we use the volunteers to supplement, and, if we have extra volunteers, then we'll keep we'll open another lift or keep a lift open longer. And there's always plenty of room for the volunteers, and
are you looking for new people to join?
Yeah, we always are, and folks can sign up on our website if they like. We do a few volunteer trainings throughout the winter, and the deal is they go through a training with us and learn about the club, and depending on what they want to do, we orient them either to the ski lifts or we orient them around the lodge if they want to work inside. Mm-hmm. And then they go sign up online for specific shifts that they'd like to work on particular days the week before the weekend.
Cool. So, and you can find that link at outdoorexplorer.org to Arctic Valley, which is our topic today. Ski area on the way up the road towards Eagle River, which starts at a pretty high elevation. So the snow is quite consistent there, much more so than down here in the bowl, or even at Alyeska, which is at lower elevation. And I've got two of the volunteer board members and people who are responsible for Arctic Valley, John Robinson Wilson and Beverly Ludke Chen. So Beverly, we were mentioning that Arctic Valley's been through some tough times over the years, a couple of times when it nearly went out of business, but it sounds like now it's doing pretty well. And I'm curious as to why you feel that's happened, you know, what the factors are that it's caused Arctic Valley to kind of seem to be investing again and getting some more attention.
Well, part of it, I think, is a return on initial investment. So we had all those kids who grew up skiing up at Arctic Valley in the 60s and 70s. Well, they all grew up, and those are our board members now. Those are the ones who came back and said, we have great memories from learning to ski here. We don't want to see the area die. What can we do to help? And so a lot of our volunteers now are ones who learned to ski up there, and they're starting to bring their kids up as well. You know, there's a lot more competition in Anchorage now than there used to be.
What you could do recreationally.
Yeah, there's so many more weekend activities, hockey, and, you know, all the different fairs and things that they have at the different arenas and stuff in town. There's just so many things to do that, you know, that's what hurt us probably in the 90s and the early 2000s, was just a lack of focus on skiing in the community. And so
you were seeing fewer and fewer people coming out?
Yeah, fewer and fewer, and they weren't being replenished by new people coming in. The only new people we got were people who moved to Alaska, already knew how to ski, and were looking for a more local place to go. But I think some of that has changed a little, and skiing has almost become its own little counterculture thing now. It's, you know, it's not the focus of Anchorage anymore, but it's got, I think, a fairly robust and hopefully sustainable smaller population within Anchorage that ski and that like to outdoor recreate, like the wilderness access. And I think we've figured out a way to tap into that. Rather than trying to make skiing more mainstream, we've learned how to tap into the smaller organization and constantly refurbish our volunteer program and get more volunteers in.
Do you feel like you're growing and doing better each year, or what's the future hold?
Yeah, so probably our low point was in the late 90s, and at that point it was questionable whether we could even open or not. And when we did, you know, we'd have 20 to 50 people skiing in a day, which at that point we were all volunteers. We couldn't afford even lift attendance. And so, you know, I was general manager for a little bit, and I would go and work a four-hour lift shift at the top of the T-bar, say.
It didn't sound very fun.
No, I remember one day particularly, no one had come up, so I had to go work the top of the T-bar, and there was 12 inches of fresh powder. And I remember going up the T-bar going, there's not going to be any powder left when I'm finished in 4 hours. And so for the first time in 30-some years, I fell going up the T-bar and had to ski all the way down through the fresh powder to get back on. And no one could get on the lift until the lift attendant was at the top. So I got my one run of powder in.
it didn't sound like much compensation, however, for 4 hours of work.
Oh, it was worth it. The powder up there is better than any powder I have ever skied, and I've skied all across the West. It's just so light and champagne soft powder. It is incredible.
It's kind of a dry little subclimate there, isn't it, compared to Alyeska, where you get much, much wetter snow.
Yes, it is very dry and light and fluffy.
Yeah, and cool. Do you ever think about, either of you, the opportunity of this area becoming like a resort and becoming, you know, something that is built up by some big company to be, you know, fancy and have more facilities? Is that something that would be desirable, or can it just go on indefinitely as kind of the mom and pop family thing?
I mean, we like, you know, we're all there because we like the culture, and, you know, and part of that is the, like Beverly was saying, you know, you go up to the bar at the end of the day and, you know, everyone knows who you are, and, you know, and everyone's friendly and hanging out, and, you know, and I think we'd lose that if the place was built up. There's also, we're on a lease through Department of Natural Resources, and so there's some issues around the lease and that sort of thing.
So how long does the lease last?
The current lease is through 2023,
the fall of 2023.
That's not too long from now, actually.
No, and we're working with the State Park and DNR to get that renewed and hopefully get another long-term lease. We can continue to invest and do some bigger projects up there.
Mm-hmm. What are your feelings about that, Beverly? I mean, I could see some company coming in, just especially as, you know, the climate's changing, lower elevations are getting less and less desirable for skiing because the snow season is just getting too short. And then you've got this great higher elevation area. Could you see it sort of turning into some kind of a thing where outside investment would come in?
I think it would be difficult. It has been looked at in the past several times. And one of the issues is that the military owns most of the land up to the last half mile or so. You know, they own pretty much up to treeline. And so all the places where you could develop condos and all of that is all military owned land. And the military owns the road, and they have the right to block access to the road if they wish. When 9/11 happened, that was a terrible time for everyone. For us, it was especially terrible because the military closed the road.
Mm.
And for a while, we couldn't open. And then they finally let us open. But all of our skiers had to register their social security number and everything with the military and have a background check before they were allowed up the area, which
makes it
kind of cuts into your customer base.
Yeah.
And then you had to convoy up, and then they'd close the road again. So Whenever anyone's looking to invest, one of the things they look at first is access. And although the military has not done that since that time, it's the possibility is there that we don't have 100% guaranteed access up to the area. It's controlled access.
Right.
And so that and the land where any of the big development would happen being owned by the military, I think it would make it pretty difficult to turn it into a resort.
Right.
And that's probably one of the reasons isn't a resort today.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And lack of sort of the Bunny Hill and that stuff, that it's a pretty challenging
area. Yeah, you could easily put Bunny Hill stuff, but you'd have to go down the valley and start encroaching onto military land. So it would have to be some kind of joint venture.
But the military no longer has their ski area, and do they just keep that road open for recreationalists, or what do they is there any issue there?
They keep it open mostly for recreation. They do still maintain a bunch of different government agency communication sites in the mountains up there.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll maybe keep us in good
and
shape.
And so that keeps some access, although those sites wouldn't need, 24-hour access. So, and the road is gated, and it closes at 10 p.m. every night, which is not a problem in the winter. In the summer, it can be a little problematic, and we get special dispensation to get them to leave it open on weekends when we have lodge rentals up there.
Okay. So I want to, just in the couple minutes we have left, I'm wondering about the next stage, John. Where is Arctic Valley going in your mind in the next couple of years? Do you see more enhancements happening? Are you making enough money that you can make it even better?
Yeah, we're really hopeful. Like you said, the Tube Park has been very, very popular once we've been able to get it open. So with the new snowmaking this year, we're hoping that really takes off. And, we're excited to offer some, corporate parties and private birthday parties and maybe some midweek stuff with the tubing park to really help get some revenue there. And then, like we said, with working with the UAA ski team and the UAA engineering school to hopefully to explore putting in some larger snowmaking systems that would let us make snow on the main ski hill to get open. So,
do you have any more terrain that you could develop if you had money for a new lift?
That would depend some on the lease and kind of how that's shaped. Mm-hmm. There might be a possibility of putting something up, kind of the Talkalak Creek drainage past Chair 2 up towards North Fork Eagle River, but that I think is, that land is handled a little separately than our main lease. So there's some questions there. We have a small rope tow right outside the back door of the lodge that we're working to get running again. And I would personally love to see a new lift put in down the hill where the old military lift was that was torn out. That area is not quite as steep and is a shorter run. So I think that would be, there's some challenges to obviously putting a lift in there past just the cost, but that would be a great area to see open again for skiing.
Great. Well, I want to thank both of you for being here. It's been really interesting, a little bit of a trip down memory lane for me. And I think that people need to get out and patronize Arctic Valley. It sounds like a great place to go skiing. When you're bored of Alyeska and you've skied all those runs, why not head north instead of south? So thank you to Beverly Ludke Chan for being here.
Thank you.
And John Robinson Wilson.
Yeah, thank you.
They're both board members of the Anchorage Ski Club, and John is the general manager at Arctic Valley. Our producer is Eric Bork. Our assistant producer who booked today's show for us is Hannah Doro. My name is Charles Wolford, and I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.